From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody, Rob Cairns here. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas and Stunning Digital Marketing. In this podcast, I have four-time author and my good friend and friend of the show, Mr. Ross Brand, with me. And we're going to talk about his latest book and digital media and live streaming trends. Sit back, relax, grab a drink, and enjoy the amazing conversation that Ross and I. This podcast is sponsored by Stunning Digital Marketing, the agency that can help protect your WordPress website today. Go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com and see what we can do to help you protect your business investment. That's stunningdigitalmarketing.com. Hey, everybody, Rob Cairns here, and I'm here with four-time best-selling author Ross Brand. How are you, Ross?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Robert.
Yeah, I think this is your third appearance on the show, friend of the show.
Third or fourth, I'm not sure.
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, it's funny. You and I can go on and on and on. I keep saying I need to start recording the outtakes before the show because they would be just fun. You know what I mean?
It's funny. Like, we were talking sports before we went, you know, to record. And I had the same kind of conversation with Todd Jones yesterday where we were talking about, you know, we got on to talk about some gear and solutions for live streaming. And next thing you know, for like 45 minutes, we're doing a sports talk show, but we're just friends talking about, you know, about what we talk about. But it's funny, like, when you have a good chemistry with somebody, it's anything could be a show, any conversation.
and that's the beauty of live streaming and podcasting, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, it really is.
So you decided to do not one editions of book, not two editions of book, four editions of the 100 live streaming and digital media predictions. And you've done four. Is there a fifth coming next year? Probably.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do four, you might as well do five, right? Each one, each volume is its own book. It's all new, you know, other than maybe a few recommended tools or things here and there. It's all new predictions. So it's a whole new 100 plus predictions, new intro, new forward. It's, you know, it's not at all the same as the previous. So we've been doing one a year, each year, and, excited to have you in the book this year. Thank you for contributing.
You're welcome.
I think this year's book is, and I know people will say this to promote something when they have a new something, but I seriously mean this. This year's book, the contributions, the chapters, what people contributed is the best of any of the books. And I think it's because people have, over the time, they've gone from the idea that I'm submitting a prediction, which is a sentence or two, taking a guess at something, to I'm writing a chapter in which the prediction's a part of it, but so is sharing my expertise, sharing my knowledge, putting it in the context of my area, where I'm working, where I'm concentrating, where I have my business and my clients and my shows and so forth. And having that context and having people writing more with a chapter in mind, and it's just happened organically over time. I think the book is is the best of the four. The first is kind of unique because a lot of it came from live streams, but the last three books, the fourth, I'm really proud of the contributions and the work that people put into their predictions. There's some that are very short and they're strong too, and they're very powerful, very punchy. But I like the idea that people thought in terms of chapters and wrote something that was of a whole, of a piece of content in and of itself. And I think that makes the book more interesting. It makes it more valuable. And I'm excited to see and hear more of what people's reactions are. But so far it's all been very positive. And a lot of people have told me the same thing, that, you know, wow, this book really took it to another level.
I have actually sent the book to a couple clients, a couple big clients, and all they say to me is, wow. And, you know, I did that with the third edition more. I did that with the fourth edition, not just because I was in it, just I really think it's a powerful book. I've read the book twice myself. I have got the book on Kindle, no question, because that was easy way to get it day one, right?
Right, right.
I've got the book on paperback over in the corner, and you now have a third way to get the book. And it's kind of new, and you haven't pushed it. So what
I have
is that
not
third
discussed.
Way?
I have not shown the book. I just got it recently in this edition or version or however you want to call it, and that is a hardback. For the first time, I published in hardback as well. So if you like having a hardback book, that is an option as well. There's the ebook, the paperback, and again, for the first time, it's really KDP. Amazon did a really nice job. They did the printing on this, and it just looks really nice. I had not ordered a hardback from Amazon before, and I'm very impressed with the with the quality. There's John Largent. You never know who you're going to get when you open it up. but I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled with how that came out.
Yeah. What I would say to anybody getting the book, if it were me, I would get a printed copy and a Kindle copy. And I'm not trying to sell Ross's books, but there's
it's okay.
You're a friend, so I can do what I want on my show. But the reason I would get the Kindle copy is it's easier to search stuff. So the way I buy tech books is I always get the electronic copy and the printed copy. One reason, and you and I have talked about, I'm an avid reader, so I read a book a week, Ross, still. So I like to read a paper book before bed. I like the Kindle copies for doing research. Do I want to search on a term? Do I want to find something quickly? I have, last I counted, 230 Kindle books in my library. So I go out to a client's and I'm trying to find something. I can do a quick search, right? So I would say get both, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I find that when I'm reading to retain and learn something, getting away from electronics and picking up a physical book and immersing myself in it, the retention is probably better in terms of being able to think through what the author's saying and so forth. When it comes to quick, when it comes to wanting to hold it, like if I'm in bed, if I'm watching TV, if I'm doing something else and I want to look up a chapter, I want to do some research, or I want to skim along or whatever, then it's much nicer to hold the Kindle and just be able to have those electronic functions like search and links and all that, whether you're holding a actual Kindle device or you're using it on, you know, an iPad or a phone or whatever. It's nice to be able to click links and follow them if that's, you know, if there's information that you're looking for. So I have sort of a similar approach as you do. I think there's value in both of them. And I haven't done an audio book for any of the books yet. But there may be some new technology coming down the pike with Amazon for audio books. And if that is the case, that's another way. I know I listen to a lot of audio books because I can do that while I'm driving. I can I can do that when my eyes are tired from staring at screens, from live streaming and, you know, editing video and all that kind of stuff. So it's really cool that we have all these different ways to consume books now, rather
than
a heavy old hardback or whatever. And in this case, it's a very manageable hardback, but you get those you get those encyclopedic type volumes on the history of the world or whatever. It's kind of nice to have it in Kindle or audio where, you know, you don't have to kill yourself to read it.
It's funny. I remember the days of going to college, and I'd carry books around in my knapsack, and I'd be like, why the hell does this bag weigh so much? Because they're all heavy. And then you get into this, you know, now, because you can throw them all on a Kindle and take them with you, you don't have to take the book with you, right?
Right.
So I think there's value to having books. I do audiobooks too, Russ. I've had an Audible subscription for way too long, so before Amazon bought it. So yeah. So we talk about digital media predictions, and before we get into it, the podcasting live streaming games going through, you and I were talking about beforehand, a bit of a tough go right now. We're seeing layoffs. Spotify's laid off people. Multiple podcast networks have laid off people. We're going back to a lot of podcasts are inserting ads from Acast right now instead of their own host-read ads.
Right.
What do you make out of all this going on?
I think it's a tough time in the industry in general. It's a tough time for the big providers. It's a tough time for the solo creator. It's a tough time for the small media team. I don't even know if the big companies and big media can all say that they're happy with what they're getting out of it. I do know at the top, podcasting is working for, you know, celebrity podcasters and really big brands and people who just hit on a moment and their podcast takes off. There's still that level of success that's out there, and those folks have no trouble getting sponsored and getting contracts. You saw Rogan just signed with Spotify again for $250 million plus. And it includes distribution to YouTube and other platforms.
And a non-exclusive, too, because RSS feed can go elsewhere this time.
Right, which basically Spotify is taking, like, the television network approach, which is, I'll let you put this on others. You run some of our ads on them. Yep. So it's an opportunity for them to sell more ads and Joe to get in front of more audience and Spotify as well. But I think these things are all cyclical. I think the way that social media now is treating posts and videos is different than in the past, where in the past you built up an audience and then you reached that audience through notifications. So if you had a big following and you went live or you published a podcast, many people in your network would get notified. Now, the size of your audience or it doesn't matter as much, and your notifications are very minimal. There's very limited organic reach. So every post, every video, every move you make on social media is being evaluated based by the algorithm based on, is this something that's going to draw traffic or not? Not like, we'll alert his network and see how that goes, right? But it's sort of like every piece of content's being compared to every other or being tried to find a place for it. So on one hand, it's still a good time to start if you haven't done it before. And you need some runway when you start anyway, right? You need some time to get your rhythm, get your settle on your topic and exactly where you want to go with things. Polish your craft, but also for the newbie, I mean, you could start a YouTube channel tomorrow and your first video could find an audience and take off just as somebody's 700th video could. So on one hand, I think you shouldn't be discouraged if you're new. On the other hand, if you're somebody who invested a lot of time in building an audience and a community, you can't rest on your laurels and say, well, because I've got this community, all I've got to do is show up and the platforms are going to put my content in front of those folks. You still have to be original and curious and playing around with content to find that right formula.
Yeah. And one of the things I'll say, being a podcaster, and you and I have talked about this, I'm about to go over episode 400. So by the time this airs,
congratulations. That's
thanks,
impressive.
Ross. It's been a labor of love, really. It didn't start off as, and I don't take ads. I do it to put eyes on the business. That's why I've done it. I've enjoyed the podcasting community. And one of the things that I've kind of looked at more and more is it worth doing video? So when I started, I didn't do video. You know that. You've been on when we've done audio only.
Right.
And because of YouTube, and I shared this in my tip in the book, I think you have to do video now. I don't think you have a choice. And how's your take on that? Do you think we should be doing video? Do you think we should be doing audio only? What do you think?
My opinion on that hasn't changed in 5 or 6 years, which is at the least turn on your video camera and record video of you recording your podcast.
Yes.
Even if you only publish the audio as a complete show, video is more of a scroll stopper than an audio clip is. So yep. If you want to use anything from LinkedIn to Instagram to any of the other major social platforms to promote your podcast, to raise brand awareness of what you're doing, having that video clip of that impactful moment, of that funny comment, of that heated engagement, whatever happens in the show, that's the minute that you could pull out, the 30 seconds, make a reel, make a short, or, you know, pull a 5-minute clip on one topic and put it on YouTube, even if you don't put the whole thing on YouTube. It's making that visual imprint for people means that even if people don't listen to your podcast, they are seeing you in their feeds, hosting shows, talking to people, having conversations. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the podcast is a part of drawing people into your business. So take advantage of all the different ways to reach them. Understand that somebody can see a clip on social media and go look up your business just as they could listen to episode after episode. And so there's many ways to reel in customers and clients, and you're not taking full advantage of it if you're not doing some form of video. If you're not comfortable with video, okay, let it pass. But again, you can just turn on your camera, record your recording of the podcast, just have the camera on you as you're talking, forget about it, and maybe there's a moment in there where you go, oh, I'm really glad I caught that video because I can use that, and that'll be a heck of a clip to put on my social platforms. It could be a great clip to put on your website to show you talking about your area of expertise. The video and visual just has a way of working on social media. Now, the audio is huge because you're building that relationship. You're going right into people's ears. They're able to take you with them when they're not online. So this isn't about audio versus video. It's about video completing the package in a world in which we're all marketing our business online and using all these different tools.
So true. You mentioned audio, and you listen to podcasts. We're talking in the car and when you're out and about. What's your podcast player of choice?
So honestly, there's a debate whether it's really a podcast or it's not a podcast. My podcast listen player of choice is YouTube.
Okay.
I am most podcasts I will consume on a television in place of when I would maybe have watched television in the past. I will watch a video podcast or I will watch a show or a segment of a show that might have been on television and was redistributed as a video podcast type clip. If I do use a player, I use the Apple Podcast player if I'm just using an audio player. But I would say much of the time, many of the podcasts I listen to are available on YouTube, and that's the first place where I'll think to go. And even if I'm doing just audio, I'm playing it, and then, you know, I'm in the car, so I flip the phone over so I don't look at the screen while I'm driving. So, I mean, like it or not, YouTube is a major player in where online audio and video is going. And it's a huge search engine, and how it's going to work with RSS feeds and video and such for traditional video podcasting, I don't know. But it's, I mean, it's a factor, and in the general public, we all think of YouTube as a YouTube talk show now as a podcast. That's what all the people call it. That's what the hosts call it.
That's what I call it.
Right. If I were to talk to somebody who wanted to do a show and they said, you know, I want to do a podcast, I say, okay, what are you thinking of? Well, we want to have two cameras. Like, they're thinking of YouTube or Spotify. They're thinking of video first. And then, oh, yeah, we can also send it to these audio apps. But they're really thinking of what a Joe Rogan is doing or any of the other big celebrity podcast hangout type shows. People often think of the studios, which, you know, if you have an unlimited budget, you can fly people in from all over the world. If you don't, you're probably doing a remote thing. But yeah, people are thinking video as a part of podcasting. It's really only the dictionary that hasn't caught up, and maybe it has.
What I'll tell you is, since I switched to doing video, my numbers doubled. And my numbers were good beforehand, but they doubled just from being on YouTube. So the way I kind of do my podcast pages now is I actually embed the YouTube code and the audio code on the page, right on top of each other. So somebody just wants to listen to the audio, it's there. I think one of the biggest mistakes that podcasters make is they don't have enough places to watch their show on their own website.
Right. So, I make a blog post out of my shows in which the first thing you come to is the video, which will be, if the video is on YouTube, then it's a YouTube embed. If it's a public video on YouTube, if it's not, then I'll host it with Streamable or another, you know, CDN. If I'm not, because then why send somebody off to YouTube if I'm not getting views and credit for it, you know, by YouTube. So, and then I'll have a headline and, you know, a little bit of the metadata or whatever, and then maybe a sentence. And then under that is the audio player. So they're both there prominently. And then under is to subscribe. And my subscribe is, it's YouTube, it's Apple Podcasts, it's Spotify. And for my podcast that's on Spreaker, there's also Spreaker. For my podcasts that are not on Spreaker, it's basically Apple, Spotify, and YouTube are the three big ones. And then further down, I'll have icons for all the, you know, I have a subscribe and follow, plugin, and I'll have Podchaser and, you know,
Pocket Cast.
I'll have all the different ones where it's available.
And the moral of the story is you should be putting out your podcast to as many distribution sources as you can, because RSS does that for you, and that's really easy to do.
Yeah. You don't know where a listener is going to come from. And so it's worth doing that.
It is worth doing that. Let's go back to the book for a second.
Sure.
You had over 100 I think there was, in the end, it says the title's 100, but I think it was like 110 or something like that.
We had 113 this year.
113 this year. Do you want to share a couple of compelling things out of the book? There was a couple that really stood out?
Yeah, I mean, I think what stands out to me, and a lot of times the introduction to the book has sort of morphed from a, here's my sort of state of what I think, to the trends that I'm seeing in the predictions, and they often align with, you know, how I'm seeing things, but not always. But the introductions become much more about what are the main themes that you're going to come across in this year's book.
Yeah.
Obviously, the biggest one is AI.
Oh, no question.
Everything is changing at such a rapid pace with AI. How you integrate it? What tools do you use with it? What are your concerns about it? How do you stay human and still take advantage of the speed of AI in terms of productivity? That's number one, and there's so many great predictions. I can't even single out any because there's so many people come to it from different perspectives. But I would say overall, although there are concerns about the ethics of things and being human and where the dangers are in terms of overreach, I would say that for the most part, almost everybody sees a positive side of AI as well in terms of productivity. Karen Glasser stands out in her prediction because she talked about the leveling effect or the democratizing effect of AI. If we're able to do with AI some of the things that were previously an advantage for big teams because they had dedicated people to do blog posts and graphics, and we're able to do all this stuff quickly with AI. We can focus on hosting our shows. Now we can play a little bigger than our size, so to speak. We can have some of the benefits of a team by offloading work to AI. So I think that's a big theme. How do we do that? What apps do we use? What's the quality? All those things are to be seen. But it's an exciting time, and it's a time where I think you can't just throw up your hands and go, I'm not interested in this. Even if you did that when websites came out and email came out and you threw up your hands and you said, I'm not doing this crap, and you came kicking and screaming 5, 6, 7 years later, and you got on, you're like, all right, I can do this for work. And then social media came out and you said, I'm never touching that. Why would anybody tweet? And years later, maybe you got a couple of profiles or whatever, but you didn't care. And I think you can't take that approach with AI if you want to be in business or you want to have a job or you want to just understand modern life. AI is not one to go, it doesn't matter for me. I think unless you're, you know, a year from retiring and you know you're set for life, and even then you want to, even in your spare time, if you're on vacation, if you're retired, AI can still make your life easier and better and make it better for understanding what your family members are going through and different people. So I think you got to get on board a little bit and at least understand it and kick the tires and play with the tools because it can have a big impact. And from where I sit, it's about learning how to offer something to the tools, right? Yep. So instead of going, this is going to replace me, how do I learn how to better input information that the AI will use to generate, and then how do I better edit, reform, refine, kick back for another question? How can I use it? And I don't know about you, but one of the most exciting things I find is when I'm trying to come up with an idea, a concept, a business plan, an article, whatever, and I kick it back and forth with chat. It's not that I go, write this for me, here's a sentence, write the rest of it for me, or whatever, but it's like I'm making the case to ChatGPT and it's saying, think about this, or what if this, or this is really good, but, and you're like, or it'll say something and I'll go, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. And like four more sentences will roll out. And it's like, it's an interesting way to almost like co-create content as though you're there with a friend and you're like both excited about the same idea. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a scary thing. It doesn't have to be it's replacing humans. It can literally be like you're telling your idea to somebody instead of sitting there staring at a blank screen and then typing it and wondering where's my next bolt of inspiration going to come from or what's the next thing to cover. You're doing it in conversation and next thing you know, you've got all the makings of a pitch, an article, a business plan, and then you just go about doing what you do to tidy it up and put it into form. So that would be number one. Number two would be, I call it micro is the new macro is the term I gave it. There's a lot of interest in smaller events, local events, micro influencers rather than big name influencers. Shorter form content, not talking about just shorts and reels, but people who are doing a half an hour podcast sometimes saying, well, I'm going to make mine now 15 minutes, or people starting a new one and going, it's going to be 10 minutes. People are busy. They don't want to commit to it. Something that's going to take a half an hour. If I give them more regularly short bites of something, perhaps that's a better way to keep an audience engaged in an ongoing basis. Whether it is or it's not, I don't know, but that is the thinking that's certainly out there. And I think I wanted to just reflect that back as
well. It's funny when you mention that, about a year and a half ago, I looked at, I do, as you know, interviews, but I also do short tip podcasts in between. And I was going to ditch the short 5-minute tip podcast. And I must have had 20 people email me and said, please don't.
Right.
So people like the short bits. I think to what I listen to, and two come to mind. One is Danny Brown's 1-minute podcast tips. And those who don't know Danny, he's an Ontario-based podcaster. And he does a quick show that's a quick podcast tip every week. And the other one I was thinking about is one by one of the industry journals called podnews.net. They take their email briefing every day and throw it into a podcast, and they're done in 5 minutes and gone.
Right. It's like a flash briefing style podcast.
Yeah. And I listen to that every day because it keeps me up to date on the industry. And from my standpoint, I would rather do that than read it, to be honest with
you. Right. That makes total sense. I think another theme is sort of where is my audience, right? Because again, social, and I include all sort of just as a general, they all work differently, but just in a general sense, social isn't so much about feeding your content to your audience anymore. It's how am I going to stay in front of an audience? So if I go onto YouTube and I've last watched a couple of your videos, I know you're going to come up first or at the top of my home feed, and then I'm more likely to watch another of your videos. So if you're putting out short, not too short, but short content every day, like let's say you're doing a 5-minute or a 10-minute video every day updating on something in the news or a short interview, here's today's tips with this expert or whatever, now you continually stay at the top of my feed and you become a habit, right? I don't have to go looking for something interesting because every day I've got Robert's podcast, and that's what YouTube's calling it as well, whether it has video or not, they're calling it a podcast. That's at the top of my feed. So there's that part of it is kind of how do you become an addiction to your audience? How do you become in front of them all the time because of the way the algorithms work, but also how do you get that momentum where it's like, I can't miss what Pod News is going to say today, because today might be the day that there's that major breaking story that affects me, right? Yep. So there might be a lot of days where you're listening and you go, this nothing really pertains to me, But you don't want that day to come along where it does, and that's the day you decided not to keep up with it. And that's, I think that's what James, who runs Pod News, has tapped into, because it's, for better or worse, it's the kind of the paper of record, so to speak, for the industry. It's the first place a lot of people think to go to get news on podcasting, and it's a very impressive thing that he's built up to be able to churn out that content every single day. Then the other thing is, what other ways can we keep in touch with our audience and stay in front of them? And I think building community is another aspect of it. We had been told, get on Facebook Live, get on Facebook, go live on Facebook, build a Facebook group. Reality is, Facebook, having a Facebook group doesn't guarantee you that those folks will be notified when you go live, when you post something, when you have a new episode. And so that means, how do you foster community outside of the social networks? That could be a newsletter, it could be an email community, but I'm thinking that, you know, finding a dedicated app, a lot of people, or not a lot of people, but some people use Local, some people use Circled. Like, where are you going to build your community where they're always going to get notified when you post something or share something? They're going to get probably get email notifications, and they can talk to you. You can give them access. Maybe there's built in some monetization. So I think you have to think of not how do I get a million people to watch or listen, but how do I get that first 10 and then that next 50 and find a place where that core group of people can stay engaged, and you give a little more access of yourself. Maybe you put some bonus content on, but you also have some, perhaps some premium offers over time. Does that make sense? As another
sure does.
Way
I agree
to work around the algorithms.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, in terms of promoting, especially live streaming stuff, Reels, Instagram, or TikTok. And I know you've talked about that. I have to go there because I know for me, I have this big aversion to TikTok. And part of the reason is it's 50% owned by the Chinese government. So as a rule, I avoid TikTok. I am not a TikTok consumer. I'm not a TikTok publisher. Am I leaving money on the table?
I mean, you'd have to test it out. That's the only way you would know. That's the only. I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you, but you just have to test it out and see if your content plays there or not.
Yeah.
For me, I find that I do better on Reels than the other two. I do better on YouTube than I do on TikTok. TikTok is the least of them. It's also, I think, my general social usage would go towards Instagram over TikTok. YouTube is where, you know, I think about video. So if I have one and I put it on Instagram, I'm going to put it on YouTube Shorts. If I put it on YouTube Shorts, I'm probably going to put it on Instagram. Occasionally, I remember to put it on TikTok as well, but I'm not that active on TikTok. I haven't put a lot of time and effort into Shorts and Reels, but I have. I now have a subscription to Opus Clip, and that's basically it's technology where you take your video, so you could take an interview like this, upload it to Opus Clip, and it will use AI to give you 20 to 30. Shorts, Reels, TikTok videos that you could actually just download and deploy. And if they're not exactly what you're looking for, but they're close, you can edit them right within the app. And if you're not comfortable editing audio or video, you can edit by text. And then they'll render and, you know, be in vertical and so forth. So I have to use that tool more, get more comfortable with it. But if I can do it quickly and it still has a chance to do something for me, great. But I, with everything I got going on, I don't see myself becoming dedicated to making a lot of shorts and reels and things like that.
Yeah.
I think if I can do it quickly and it has some interest, but you know, I'm okay if my Instagram is still pictures and you know, what have you. I basically, and this isn't something I don't think we discussed this in the book really, but basically my approach to social this year is LinkedIn first.
I agree.
And over the years, I've always done, if I'm going to open up a feed, right? If it's news related, if it's sports related, if it's related to something breaking in the industry, I'm probably going to go to Twitter. If it's to pass the time flicking through some pictures, I'm going to go to Instagram. And when I think to post, if I have a nice picture, I'm going to post it on Instagram first. And if I have some news, I'm at an event, there's a great quote I want to share, there's a piece of information I learned, I'm going to go to Twitter. That's kind of how it goes. And it kind of goes the same way when it comes to promoting things. I'm going to go to Twitter first, and then, you know, Instagram, and do the link in bio thing, and probably drop it in Facebook, and go, oh yeah, I should probably promote this on LinkedIn too. But now I'm making a concerted effort that when I have an idea or I hear something great or a photo or whatever, think about, does this work on LinkedIn? And if it does, let's think about how we can tell the story on LinkedIn first. And then if I want to or have time, I can post it on the other platforms. But let's treat LinkedIn as the active creator network that it possibly could be and is for some people, rather than, you know, another place to maybe throw up a promo post or whatever, but to actually do content for LinkedIn. And
no, I don't disagree, Ross.
With that, I started a newsletter as well a couple of weeks ago on LinkedIn. So I'm very committed to that. And I'm also now making an effort that when I just want to consume or engage or check any notifications, I'm not like on top of my notifications all the time, go to LinkedIn first. If you're having a conversation, if the conversation could be on three different platforms, let's do the one on LinkedIn first. And if I get time for the others, that's okay. And I think I'd like the quality of the conversations on LinkedIn. I think it's friendly. I think there's a sense of community there amongst creators. I think it's not as competitive as the other platforms. I think it's crazy not to at least explore what's possible on LinkedIn. If after 6 months or a year I find it's not doing anything for me, then at least I don't have to go back and go, what if you put more time into LinkedIn? But I other than when I got LinkedIn Live for like 6 months, I don't think I really, 6 months to a year where I was all in on LinkedIn and LinkedIn Live, I don't think I've really given LinkedIn a fair chance.
I think where that changed for me, it's funny you talk about it, is about, it'll be 3 years in December, I got asked by LinkedIn themselves to co-manage a WordPress group. And that WordPress global community has over 10,000 people in it. Wow. And the minute I started partially because LinkedIn originally populated the group with anybody who had WordPress as a skill. So they pre-populated the group, but we haven't lost people. When we started, I was saying to Courtney Robertson the other day, we were around 6,000. So we've grown that group. Mm. And as a result, being a co-manager of a large group, my LinkedIn profile has gone up. And that's what people don't realize. When you get into that stratosphere, when you're managing a group of 10,000 people, it actually raises your profile. And so I've gone all in. You know, it's funny. Both you and I are not talking about that Facebook platform, because I'll be honest with you, Facebook's not my favorite platform. I will say that every time we have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten to the point where I don't even post personal pictures on Facebook. I might post one here or one there just mm-hmm. to appease the family. but right. I don't even do that. Like, because they all scream at me because I've taken all my big trip pictures and put them back on my personal website and said, go here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. Well, then I don't want to either. Like, I'm just...
I've been so fed up with Facebook. Facebook's been my example of how big tech, big media are combining to really crush the small creator and all the things that they told you to commit to, and then they changed on it, or they didn't give you reach, and all the platforms do this. They have a new feature. They tell you to go all in on it, and then after 6 months or a year or 2 years, they start backing off, and like you're left with a group or a live streaming strategy or whatever that isn't working anymore. The funny thing is, I think LinkedIn has, I think Facebook has not worked that well for so many people that the space is opening up a little bit again. I had made a point that I wasn't going to live stream to Facebook unless it was like go live in the moment and do something. Like, I wasn't going to do my shows on Facebook anymore.
Yeah, I don't do it either.
Because I why do I want to do my show where there's going to be three people watching because Facebook doesn't alert anybody or show it to anybody? Except now it's starting to build again a little bit, and I'm starting to go there again just because I think they so crushed the small creator and that they need to start bringing people back up again just to have people who might buy an ad once in a while or boost a post or what have you. I could be totally off on that, but I think that people have so put their attention on Instagram and other platforms, TikTok, that Facebook, you know, these are all utilities. I mean, I don't get emotional about like, yeah, I get pissed at Facebook, but hey, if the lane's open, I'm gonna drive down and throw it in the basket. You know, I mean, this is business, and I do think that there may be, again, I don't have scientific data on this, but it may be opportunity opening up a little bit on Facebook now.
I would agree with you. It's funny when you say about your shows. I do post my podcasts, as you know, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But that's about all I'm posting these days. So I've still got this ongoing 4-year-old issue, and we've talked about this, where I can't post my business domain on Facebook. I'm still into this problem. So at that time, I was running ads. I was doing other stuff. And I'm like, okay, you don't want my money? I'll give my money to Google. I'm okay with that. So we've touched on a lot today. Let's talk about live streaming platforms. We're recording this podcast on StreamYard. StreamYard's a platform you and I both know very well. Mm-hmm. I like StreamYard because it records locally, and it's the one I seem to have the less problems with. If you were looking at platforms, what else would you look at?
Okay, so StreamYard's is still my go-to for most things.
Okay.
If you're a Mac, and you know, full disclosure, I know, but I hosted a show for StreamYard. I've worked with them, and
they're good people.
They're really good people. And I'm still an affiliate and continue to share those links and so forth. So for me, StreamYard is still, you know, in the starting lineup, and it's at the top of the list. It's the first one I'm likely to go live with. Okay, now, what other options? If you have Mac and you like to be a little more hands-on in setting up your scenes and your overlays and maybe even doing a little, I don't know whether it's color grading or LUTs or all these different production elements, if you want that level of control, Ecamm is a high-quality app. The video quality is really good on Ecamm. I think you can stream in 4K on Ecamm. I'm not positive, but I believe you can. But it's got a very active community, and there's a lot of information out there you can learn. It's definitely not as easy as StreamYard. And what I like about StreamYard is I can get a guest on. But I would never tell anybody who is good at using Ecamm, you shouldn't use Ecamm, because I think it's a highly, highly professional platform, and it opens up almost complete creative control. If you really want complete control at a professional level, then you have things like OBS and Wirecast and vMix, which I don't mess with so much anymore, because I just don't like StreamYard has given the stability now, and Ecamm has that stability that I can do everything I need in those platforms. And so the heavier load on my computer of Wirecast, or the less user-friendly layout of OBS, for me, aren't necessities, right?
Yeah.
But I still have Wirecast, and occasionally a project comes along where I will choose that to use. But again, so StreamYard, Ecamm, Wirecast are all, I would still recommend all three of those. The other one that's always been high quality, but mobile is not my thing so much for live streaming, and certainly not setting up multicam and things like that with mobile. But Switcher Studio's always been a highly professional platform for mobile, and they seem to be adding more and more features that make it less of just an exclusively iPhone, iPad, mobile, and really almost like an integrated entire video platform with all the bells and whistles. And I haven't checked out their latest updates, but I plan to do that. But they've always done high quality stuff. If you're an iPhone user, and if you've got iOS devices, you can do a very, very impressive live stream or podcast recording or whatever in multicam, and control it right from an iPad.
Yeah.
So those would be the ones that I highlight. I think Restream's okay. I think their sales, the ability to put a product with a QR code and all that right from their interface is really cool. That's something I like about Restream. But I think for that type of platform, StreamYard, I would put StreamYard over it. Wave did some creative things with their platform, EVMux. They both have a fair number of positive points to recommend them. But again, StreamYard is just, it's more refined at it. It may not have all the bells and whistles as some of the others, but it's got the stability down. It's got the bandwidth down. It's got the quality down. But you know, I would keep an eye on EVMux as well. So if you want to come back around, I think StreamYard, if you have StreamYard and Ecamm in your arsenal, if you're on a Mac, between the two of them, you can do almost anything with live streaming you need to do. If you're on Windows, StreamYard still is a great go-to. And then maybe you want to look at vMix, or maybe you want to look at OBS or something else for when you need complete control over how your video comes across on screen.
I do not need on Windows the complete control and the hassles of setting up OBS anymore. I am sorry.
A simple question and you get a rundown of the entire industry. People like Riverside. They like the local recordings. StreamYard has local recordings, but Riverside mixes them together. So people like that.
I know.
I've never gone in too deep on Riverside. And then there's tools like the A10 Mini and the A10 Mini Pro and the A10 Mini Extreme that you can use to switch and record. And some of the A10 Mini products you can actually stream directly to YouTube or Facebook right from the box without even needing a computer. So it all depends on what level of complexity and so forth you want to deal with.
Thanks a lot for this today, Ross. As we kind of wrap it up a bit, I'm doing this presentation on Saturday and about lessons learned from over 400 podcasts. You've been live streaming for a long time. What are your three top lessons you've learned? Put you on the spot.
That is a $400 question for the 400th episode. Top three lessons I've learned from live streaming or from
or anything. Podcasting or doing any. Yeah.
It's about the host, mm-hmm. not about the guest, not about the subject matter. At the end of the day, it's about whether they like the host or not. Has the biggest factor in whether people come back again and again is their relationship to the host. There are many ways to engage your audience. It doesn't have to be shouting people out in the middle of a sentence and stopping and go, hey, this person's here, whatever. Although that can be fun at times in a casual live stream. But there are many ways to engage and recognize your audience besides putting comments on the screen or shouting out. And I think one of the most effective ways is when you see something in the chat that can become a question or become an additional comment in your to bring it in. Oh, Rob in the chat says that he sees podcasting going this way or whatever. What do you think about that? And that to me is what makes live streaming special, is that you're getting that instantaneous feedback and you have people in the chat who know more about a topic than you do, or come at it from a different direction, think of something that you didn't think of, know your guest better. And so if you're keeping an eye on that without losing the show, it's like having 20 producers in the chat, you know, helping you out. So engage with your audience, bring in the content, but it doesn't have to be in a way that's disruptive to the flow of the show. Some people think if they aren't shouting out people every second, oh, they're not doing a live stream right. And that's not the case. You can go into a podcast style recording and very much bring people in the flow of the show. The third thing would be, video's the scroll stopper, as I said earlier. Whether you do audio or you do video content, if you want to repurpose it on social media, you've got to think about the visual and how that captures attention. Many times people are listening or are watching and their audio is off. So do you have, if you're doing a social clip, do you have a visual that captures their attention? Do you have a graphic? Do you have captions that work? I'm not saying that I do all those things all the time either. They're a lot of work. They're a lot of time.
Oh yeah.
They don't always, you can do all that work and you don't always get a return on it. But the reality is, video is important for the social outreach part of it, and having those videos, as we talked about earlier, having that option to cut a video clip, even if it's an audio podcast and you're only publishing the audio, can take you a long way in terms of, you know, the brand awareness and the recognition, and even leading people back to your business. So awesome. Those would be my three, I would say. What did I say for number one now? I was just getting to a summary, and I could have just shut up, but I had to try and do a summary, and I lost track. What the heck did I say for number one?
It's all
good. Gonna bother me.
You know what? Ross will watch the replay.
Oh,
like
number one
else
is the host. You're the one that brings people in, not your guest, not, you know. So it's the host. Focus on yourself as the host. Doesn't mean you don't focus on your guests, but the host is so important. And so remember, it's your relationship. A lot of people think that getting the big guest is what's gonna keep an audience, but it's really developing your relationship with the audience. So that was the first one, and then There's also 2 and 3. You can watch it again, and if you missed it, give Rob a little extra watch time or listen time.
It's funny you mention the host, because it's also the host that gets those guests. And
right,
you know, I kind of look at my podcast journey, and I'll tell you, as you get better and you do more and you do more episodes, it's easier to get those guests because of the host. And I've had no problem pulling in people. I'll share with you, I did a call for guests on Twitter a couple back in December, and I put together 8 podcasts out of that call for guests.
Wow.
Just because of my notoriety in the community, because of who I am, because of my relationship with people. And it's all about relationships, and people don't understand that. Podcasting's the same. It's all about the relationship.
Right, right. But it's what your guest brings. It's the why you're having them on, how it fits into what you're doing. If you just have a big name on for the sake of having a big name on, of course, if you have that opportunity, take it. But if you expect that person's audience is going to come over and stay with you because you had them on, that isn't what they're going to, that isn't what your audience is going to come back for, right? They're going to come back because they like you. When that big guest isn't there anymore, you're the one who brought them in. You're the one who's entertaining them. You're the one who's feeding them information that they want. And I think more hosts have to realize that and not think it's outside themselves where the answer is to growing and to making a better show.
I agree with you. Ross, another hour with you flies by. You and I always touch on so much.
It's always fun, Robert.
Yeah, it is. Show that hardcover again.
Okay.
Please. Go out and get the book. That's the hardcover version. As I said, I encourage you to get the Kindle version as well, and then either the hardcover or the soft cover. By the way, as we're recording, I've already ordered mine, so there you go.
Oh, you're awesome. Thank you, Rob.
I just love, they're like some of the best read books in my library, just because of to do, and not just being involved in this year's project. It's good information, and the stuff in versions 1, version 2, and version 3 are still as relevant today as ever before. So I would say go get all 4, and support Ross, what he's doing, and support the other amazing people who wrote tips. I mean, 113 tips this year. That's pretty good. I suspect we'll see an audio book. You beat me to that punch, because I was going to ask you when it was coming. So
when AI
gets off its butt.
Yeah, when Amazon officially rolls out AI to me, to where I'm not breaking any rules or anything, then we're gonna click that button, and in a few minutes we'll have an audio book.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, Ross, to talk live streaming or digital media, how's the best way?
Yeah, livestreamuniverse.com. Livestreamuniverse.com is the website, or message me on any of the socials. I'm on LinkedIn. That's kind of where my focus is. Reach out and connect, and then, you know, I'll accept your connection, and then we can message each other on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Thanks, Ross, for all this. And again, congrats on the book, and here's to many more. Have a great
day. Thank you so much, Robert. Thanks for sharing the book, and thanks for being a part of it and writing a terrific chapter.
Such a pleasure to be involved and to support somebody I consider a good friend. So that's
thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day, Ross.
Bye-bye. You too. Thanks, Robert.
This show is brought to you by stunningdigitalmarketing.com, your Toronto leader in digital marketing services. Not only do we protect your WordPress website, we can help you with your site, provide social media management for your business, or even do one-on-one consulting. To find out more, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com. A very special thank you to my good friend, Ross Brand, for joining me and sharing his expertise on the SDM show. Hey, everybody, Rob here again. Thanks for listening to the SDM show. It's such a pleasure to have you every week. If you want more on our agency website, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.com. We are your WordPress security experts. We'd be glad to help you out. If you want to learn more about me, Rob Cairns, go to meetrobcairns.online. From there, you can find links to everything I do on the web, as well as book time with me. So feel free. If you want to make comments about this podcast or know a guest possibly suitable for the podcast, please email us at podcast@stunningdigitalmarketing.com. Or conversely, you can go to X, formerly known as Twitter, and tweet at me at Rob Cairns. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much, and I love you. Please join us next week for another interesting podcast, and have a great week, everybody. Bye for now.